He's a NASCAR guy with a basement shrine, a Langford fan for life. Chargers are off to a terrible start, but that won't change his mind. Matching up all the cornerbacks, touchdown regression and weekly stats. But if your team falls flat, he's the one to blame. He's a Brainiac, Brainiac on the case, with projections that can put us in first place. He's a Brainiac, Brainiac, he's my clay.
Hey, the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Go to geico.com today. It's Tuesday, June 29th. Field and Mike hanging out with you. Hello, Mike. What's going on, my friend?
Oh, man. Not too much. It's my youngest's birthday today. She turns 5. So I've been actually, instead of preparing for this show, I've been building a giant frozen castle that's like taller than her. So, you know, we'll just wing it, guys. You know, I haven't done any football research all offseason, so I don't know anything we're about to talk about. But I got that castle almost built, and that's really what matters today.
Okay, yeah, as usual, Mike not showing up to the podcast prepared, but happy birthday to your baby girl, the young queen. Mike is the ultimate dad, not just in terms of his dad jokes and building frozen castles, but also the way he treats his little girls. So I'm sure today will be a celebratory day, other than stuck with me for the next, I don't know, 30 or 45 minutes. So the spirit of today's show is that we recently did a mock draft. It was Thursday of last week. I think that was June 25th or June 24th. I don't know. Some day that was not June 29th. It was 10 teams. It was a half-point PPR mock draft, Mike. And we're going to go to some of the takeaways and just sort of look at some of the notable players, some of the things that stood out during this mock draft. Just for reference, in terms of where we were picking, Kyle, the 3rd overall pick. I had the 6th overall pick. Daniel was 7. You were 9. There were 10 teams in total. I don't recall who had the number 1 overall pick, but that's neither here nor there. But Mike, I'm going to start at the top, as we often do. And it seems like 6 players are going to go pretty frequently in any format or most format mock drafts that we do at ESPN. It's 6 running backs. Other than the ADP, which is where, obviously the masses are drafting, it's pretty much 6 running backs, or you might have Travis Kelce in the 6th slot over Zeke Elliott. But the 6 are kind of obvious, right? It's Christian, in some order, Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, Dalvin Cook, Derrick Henry, Ezekiel Elliott, and who am I forgetting as the 6? Of course, this is a great podcasting. Saquon Barkley. Did I say him already?
Yeah.
So anything, do you feel like are we at the point where it's a consensus top 6, or is this year different from previous years where it felt like we had a pocket at the top of the draft that was pretty solidified?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I think I would categorize it as a big 7, really, you know, at running back. I think that some people might agree on 6, but, you know, I have McCaffrey, Cook, Barkley, Kamara, Henry, and then Zeke and Taylor, maybe a little step back from that 5, but they're right in that conversation as well. I mean, you might, and again, it might sound crazy, but there's a couple of things to think about here. You know, CMC, we know he's the 1.1. He's going to go first at pretty much every draft. Cook has missed, at least 2 games every year of his career. Saquon, obviously, we know Stefania Bell has some concerns with some injury concerns, maybe a limited role early in the first month of the season before he's fully unleashed this season. Alvin Kamara, no more Drew Brees in that offense. Derrick Henry, I mean, look at the last couple of years of top-end fantasy running back production. Not many guys are 28 years old, and not many guys repeat as top-end fantasy running backs after leading the running back position in touches as he did last season. So there's red flags there. So and my point being, they all have red flags on top of as well as these other guys like Zeke, whose workload at times was reduced down the stretch last season. There's some chatter about Tony Pollard playing a bigger role. But this guy was also RB3 during the weeks that Dak Prescott started last season. So he very much still has a high ceiling. And, of course, Jonathan Taylor, I mean, look, he was a part-time player most of last season and ended up RB6. So can we really categorize him as a guy that's not in that conversation in that top 6 or 7? I don't think so. He should play a bigger role, even with Marlon Mack back on that roster in year number 2. The offensive line should still be in pretty good shape. So I think it's really any of those 7 in those top spots, and you can organize them pretty much however you want.
I think it's worth noting that in our mock drafts, which are done by the ESPN fantasy staff, of course, that you're going to see running backs go really early, almost every single draft. Like, we're going to skew very running back heavy, very quarterback patient. But those six running backs go first. Jonathan Taylor is an interesting one. Mike, I'm glad you brought up, because my counter was going to be, what about Marlon Mack? And this is one of those things that in fantasy can either be a thing or it can be completely irrelevant. When a team loves a player, like we know the Colts love Marlon Mack, one shoulder is the devil saying, well, Marlon Mack may get, let's just say, 10 carries a game, and that could be a detriment to Jonathan Taylor's value. The angel on the other shoulder may say, hey, listen, Jonathan Taylor, clearly a superior talent, has some impact in the passing game as well, too good to pass up, he belongs in that tier. But my general sense is that Taylor will not be viewed by most in quite that same sort of borderline 6-7 overall that maybe you explained him there. But that's, I mean, listen, if you end up with Jonathan Taylor, no one's going to complain about him being one of your top picks. A player that I think is going to be a little bit more divisive, Mike, and maybe the reason why he's going ahead of his ADP is, again, because it's ESPN fantasy staffers and running backs always go early. It's Miles Sanders. You know, Matthew, I believe, is, again, sort of down on Miles Sanders, concerned about the, once again, crowded backfield. What are your concerns or lack thereof on Miles Sanders this year?
Yeah, so Sanders, I think I'm probably a little bit more comfortable with than some others. I don't know. I mean, he's going in the third round. I'm 16th. He's 16th on my board, but I would put him right in that Swift, Najee Harris, Mixon, maybe Gibson sort of category. I think he could pay that off. I mean, kind of relying on big plays last season that kind of inflated his numbers, ended up with 5.3 yards per carry. Obviously, we're not going to project that moving forward, but you would expect him to be healthier on the field more, and certainly has a path to a large role. I mean, I don't think that, you know, it's not like they went out like, let's use Kerryon Johnson, right? He's on the roster. Let's use him as an example. He was a second round pick a few years ago. You know, the Lions went in the last season and drafted DeAndre Swift. That made you worried about Kerryon Johnson's long-term outlook, obviously, and short-term outlook. The Eagles didn't really do that, right? They claimed Johnson off waivers. They drafted Kenneth Gainwell in round five, which is not, you know, a lot of people are high in him and taking him too early in rookie drafts. Fifth round picks, not far from a safe bet. And honestly, he probably has a better chance of busting than he does turning into a reliable NFL player. And I'm rooting for him. Don't get me wrong, but it's just the nature of the beast there. Boston Scott, Jordan Howard, you know, not all these guys are going to make the roster. So I don't think there's any major competition. He is the most skilled player there. He's a guy that can still push for 20 touches. He's a guy that's been very, with the exception of some drops, he is an effective pass catcher, can make big plays with the ball in his hands, and he's only 24 years old. So, you know, I think Sanders has a chance to bounce back in a big way. And honestly, if Jalen Hurts plays well and is running the ball well, we know what running quarterbacks can do for the efficiency of running backs in terms of yards per carry. So there's potential to be some big lanes. And one other nugget field on Sanders, it's easy to look at the Eagles and say, oh man, their offensive line was atrocious last year. But remember, they didn't have almost all of their offensive line. Much like Dallas, they were all injured. They're pretty much all back with the exception of Jason Peters. They're healthy. They have a ton of talent there. The offensive line should be an asset. I think it'd be a top 10, maybe a top five unit in the NFL this season. That also will help Sanders and Jalen Hurts.
Couple other takeaways from this draft, some that were similar to our prior mock draft. And as a reminder, you can check out all the mocks on ESPN.com if you want to see sort of how our eyes view the board, depending on which slot we are in. We'll be doing a handful of them over the course of the summer leading up to the regular season. No quarterbacks in rounds 1 through 4, Mike. I'll say it's the cows come home. ESPN fantasy staffers are just not going to draft quarterbacks early because, you know, especially within a 10-team league, there's 13, 14, 15, maybe even 17 quarterbacks going into the season that I think people would feel comfortable with. But when quarterbacks did eventually go, it's also, again, no surprise, the top two were Patrick Mahomes. And then maybe this is, I don't know if it's a surprise because it's not like it's that hot of a take, but Josh Allen goes after Patrick Mahomes, who, coming off of how he played last year, I think it's a fully justified selection for Josh Allen. But I think where it is interesting, of a position where you only play one player, is that George Kittle ended up going before Darren Waller. ADP has it reversed. And I would ask you, Mike, do you think that there is justification for one decisively over the other? Or are these two so closely bunched that, you know what, I'm not going to nitpick you if you grab Waller 3 slots ahead of me and I take Kittle or vice versa?
No, I don't think it's a huge gap by any means. You know, I have Waller projected for 244 points. I have Kittle at 230. So, I mean, obviously pretty close. It's a, you know, less than a point a week, and you know, a touchdown here or there either way could flip that. So I think it's pretty close. You know, last year we heard Darren Waller's going to fall because they added Henry Ruggs and Bryan Edwards in round three. And obviously we saw that Waller's workload actually increased, and he had a career year. So, you know, and I say that because that's kind of the argument against Kittle, right? We have Brandon Ayuk in year two. He was awesome last year. We have Debo Samuel healthy now. So suddenly that's going to perhaps mean less reliance on George Kittle. I don't think so, right? I still have him catching 84 balls, going over 1,000 yards, six touchdowns. We know that he is one of the best all-around players in the NFL, let alone a tight end. So if he's healthy, he very much can jump to the elite. And he's one of the few guys, Field, who has a chance to lead the position in fantasy points. I mean, a decade from now, I don't think we're going to be talking about Travis Kelce leading the position in fantasy points for the 15th straight year or whatever. At some point, he's going to hand over the baton, and who better than a guy like George Kittle who could block and run routes and score touchdowns to take control there. So I think your biggest hesitation there is probably the quarterback situation. We don't know when they're going to turn it over, and if they're struggling and go to Lance and Lance goes through rookie pains, maybe it hurts this offense. But, you know, look, they were efficient on offense and defense last year, despite not having Garoppolo and having all of those injuries. So I think that they'll be okay with a learning curve going on at the quarterback position. So again, I think it's very close. I would pick Waller, but if someone picks Waller and I'm aiming for a tight end, I'm not really settling on George Kittle. I know that he's going to come through as one of the top end tight ends again this season if he's healthy.
Yeah, and Mike, this may be anecdotal, and if anybody is ever the person to dispel an anecdotal notion, it's you. It feels to me like of those two, Kittle's more likely to have, not a lot, but a few weeks during the year where the 49ers just don't need him to dominate in the passing game to win, right? Like, they may run all over and through an opponent, and Kittle could have like a 4-for-40 game and be the best blocker on the field and do all kinds of crazy George Kittle stuff. So I understand that can be proven. It could be dispelled. It just feels to me like Waller, given how bad the Raiders defense was last year, and I think will be, you know, not that much improved this year, they're probably going to have more games where they're throwing it more and more and more because that's how their offense has tended to operate with Waller's emergence over the past two seasons. I don't know if this is nitpicking, Mike. I feel like we do this every year because they've been teammates for, this is the third or fourth season now, and they're obviously both very good players. But Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods, it's always, who would you take? It used to be Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs. Now it's Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods. Robert Woods goes over Kupp in this draft, and his ADP is nearly 14 slots higher. Do you agree with that? And if so, what's the justification?
You know what? It's interesting. You know, I want to get this stat right. So as you're talking there, I'm trying to pull this up because I thought it was really interesting about how good and reliable Robert Woods has been. So check this out. I just pulled it up here. You look at his four seasons with the Rams, his target share is 24%, 25%, 23%, 24%. Super consistent and super high. That's wide receiver one sort of usage. Also handles a bunch of carries. He's handled between 4% and 5% of their design runs as well during that span. He's a top 14 fantasy receiver each of the past three seasons. No lower than third in snaps, 11th in routes, 13th in targets, and 11th in catches at wide receiver during that span. That just shows you how high his floor has been and how productive he's been. And another reason I lay that outfield is because last season, you know, obviously that, you know, Woods fit all those categories last season, had a tremendous fantasy season. During the weeks that they played together, 16 games, including the playoffs, they played together in full, Cooper Kupp actually out-targeted Robert Woods, 134 to 128, which I don't think many people realize. So I think they're both fine. You know, I think that last year people were disappointed with Kupp because his touchdowns kind of plummeted, but that was expected. He was one of the poster boys for touchdown regression to the mean. We expected him to come back to earth in that department. He's 24th on my board. Woods is 16th on my board. Again, that area at wide receiver is so tight. You could flip them a bunch of guys around, and I would be totally comfortable with it. There's just so much talent in that round 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 range in drafts this season. So, look, if your preference is Kupp, fine. If it's me, I'm going to take Woods. He's just been he's been more reliable and had a slightly higher floor.
Yeah, and one thing I think is worth noting, and I don't know how many people actually fall into the trap of evaluating, like when they're deciding Robert Woods is their pick, how often he or she is saying, okay, it's Robert Woods or Cooper Kupp. More likely, it's, you know, a handful of wide receivers you're deciding between. It's Robert Woods, and to your point, the other wideouts that are in that tier, and like, focus your energy there. Don't focus in on which Rams wide receiver do I need to take. It might be, I'm just making these names up here, Robert Woods versus Terry McLaurin versus, I don't know, whatever the, you know, whoever you think is Tyler Lockett or somebody in that range. Like, evaluate it through that prism, not through which Rams wide receiver you need to take, because they both probably end up doing pretty well for you. A team that has three wide receivers who are going to be drafted in fantasy this year is the Steelers. And Deontay Johnson was the top pick Steeler this time around, Mike. Any surprise there, or do you feel like it's justified based off of the volume last year and the way that specifically Juju was used as really like the lack of a big play waiting?
Yeah, I think it's justifiable for sure. I mean, when Johnson was healthy and a full go for the Steelers, he was the guy, right? He was the guy that had the huge target share, and you know, he missed action. There were a couple of games where he left early, like early on in the game, which people who had them in their lineups remember. What's the opposite of fondly? Not so good, not so good. But still ended up, guys, with almost 90 catches and over 900 yards last season. So you know, he gets open. He sees a lot of targets, and that's really the key. I know he had a lot of drops. He went through that slump in the middle of the season. I'm not too worried about that. As long as guys are getting open and are in their prime years, and he's only 24, you know, it should be all systems go. So I like him a lot. He's one of them guys that when I first ran the projections popped up really high, and it makes sense because of the volume in an offense that can support three receivers. You know, there was only two offenses that had three top 25 receivers last year. It was the Steelers, and it was the Panthers, which I think would surprise a lot of people, but that's not new. That's not new for the Steelers at all. During the Big Ben and Mike Tomlin era, they've often supported three fantasy relevant receivers. And part of the reason for that is, and this becomes more and more the case, you have more running quarterbacks than ever. Guys can do more with their legs. You have more starting quarterbacks that are scramblers and add a lot of production that way. And if they pull the ball down and don't throw it and scramble for 10 yards instead of throwing it, that's less fantasy production for the wide receivers. Big Ben does not do that, right? He doesn't do anything with his legs. They're a pass-heavy offense. Even with Najee Harris, they're still going to throw the ball a lot, I think. He's going to drop back. He's not going to scramble. He's going to throw the football. So that opens the door for all of these talented wide receivers to produce. So I think Johnson is the preferred target. I think Juju and Claypool are pretty close in line. Higher ceiling for Claypool, but Juju and PPR has a very nice floor. And honestly, we'll talk about this more throughout the offseason, but Eric Ebron, I think, is perhaps the most underrated tight end, not named Logan Thomas right now, in drafts. He was very productive. He was a top eight fantasy tight end after week two last season, and he's still the guy there. There's no more Vance McDonald. The number two in line is a rookie. I think Ebron's going to be busy this season as well. So, yes, the Steelers offense can't support all these guys in fantasy, and I do believe Johnson is your primary target from this group.
One of the most difficult players to place this year in rankings is Odell Beckham Jr. So I'm not going to ask you, I know you do have a metric, or you do have a projection that's probably down to like the half yards of how much you expect him to produce this year. But if you are drafting Odell, Mike, is the thought process in your head, okay, I'm willing to roll the dice on a guy that like I'm exploring the possibility, or in my mind, I have accepted that like he could finish as a top five wide receiver based off of talent and obviously track record in the past? Or are you at the point now that you're only taking Odell if like you've got enough already in the bank at wide receiver that he's more like, I don't say he's a floor play, because there's nothing about Odell that screams like low ceiling other than the past couple of years not going perfectly. What is your mindset when you're taking Odell? What's the value you are looking for in drafting him?
Yeah, wide receiver three lottery ticket is my mindset, right? Because, you know, we just haven't seen – it's crazy to say we haven't really seen a consistently high ceiling from him in a long time. I mean, you look back at 2019, he went over 1,000 yards. He only had one top 10 fantasy week that season. Last year, he had that one huge game, but that was his only weekly finish better than 19th in six full games. So – it just hasn't been there as of late. He's averaging over the past 4 years under 10 games played per season. And also he's 29, right? So, you know, fantasy purposes, for wide receiver purposes, kind of getting up there, right? As you get close to 30, that's when you start to get a little bit concerned about ceiling. So I'm not sure, especially in a run first offense that likes to move the ball around, that's going to use three tight ends in the passing game at times, that drafted a where did they take Schwartz? Round two, I believe it was. Maybe it was the day two pick, Anthony Schwartz. So,
I think it was the third round.
He's factored in. What's that?
I think he was a third-round pick, I believe.
There you go. So, nonetheless, a day-two pick on wide receiver. Rashard Higgins was obviously pretty good in his place last season, so perhaps you want to factor him in. Jarvis Landry, they threw the ball more and got it to Nick Chubb in the out of the backfield more down the stretch last season, especially in the playoffs. So, I don't know. I don't know if he's the target ceiling anymore, and I don't know if he's the same player. I think it's safe to say he's not the same player he was when he was lighting it up during his first three seasons in the NFL. So, some concerns, but at the end of the day, Field, when you see him and he's the top of your queue, it's like, man, it's Odell Beckham. You know, if anybody could come out of surprise and go off and just have a huge top five season, it's a guy that has them raw skills. So it is a, you know, it's a tricky one to kind of navigate through when you're drafting. But for me, and I'm looking for you right now, he is 25th on my board. So honestly, I raised all them concerns. I'm probably a little bit higher than the consensus on Beckham.
Yeah, that actually sounds about right, though, because as you described him, he's a wide receiver three lottery ticket, and that is right in the middle of that wide receiver three range. So I'm with you there, Mike. I think Odell probably is a player that some people are going to avoid entirely because of how the past couple of years have went. Maybe he or she overdrafted them, but still a guy that at his apex could be the best value on your team. And you don't say that frequently about a guy that might go in the sixth, maybe early seventh round. Some differences from the last draft to this draft that I thought were interesting. Actually, Kyle Stoppard found them, so he really gets the credit for finding them interesting. But Kyle Pitts, things have cooled a little bit, Mike. He went 35th overall in the first draft. I took him 55th overall in this draft, so right in the middle of the sixth round. I'll just, you know, my reasoning at this point, Mike, and we're going to get to sort of the core of our team later, but I was able to go Zeke, Joe Mixon, Justin Jefferson to start things here. So I have a bunch of young players on my roster and some lottery tickets. And I sort of felt like with Kyle Pitts, once I got past him, there are some other very, very good tight ends. Like you mentioned, Logan Thomas, TJ Hockenson, guys that are going to be useful this year, Eric Ebron and the like. But to me, maybe this is a little bit of practice to see like where he's going to go otherwise later on in drafts. And also, I don't know what the chance is, but it's non-zero that Kyle Pitts, you know, has one of the best rookie seasons from a tight end ever. And if so, then drafting him 55th overall might wind up being a value play as opposed to an overpay.
Yeah, you know what? And I'm looking at his ADP in best ball drafts right now, right over the past week or so. And yep. Field, it's 55, literally right on the nose. Money. So there you go. Look, he has that in 10 teamers. He has that 6th round ADP right now. It's in the 5th round in 12 teamers. That's probably where he belongs. I mean, I played kind of the devil's advocate role, I guess, with Pitts, if you will, recently, just because I feel like everyone's talking about ceiling and not talking about the chance that, you know, he's young and he might have a learning curve here. He might start a little bit slow, but at the end of the day, it's not like you're drafting him at his ceiling where Waller and Kittle are. You're drafting him where Andrews is and TJ Hockenson and that's pretty much it. That's the conversation he's in right now. He's going before Goddard and Fant and Logan Thomas, those kind of guys. So I think that's appropriate because of the ceiling he has and the fact that they got rid of Julio Jones and he's a path to a big target share behind Calvin Ridley. So I think it's fine. I think you've got a perfectly reasonable value. And I think as the year goes on and there's preseason games and training camp hype and all that, those kind of things, I think his ADP could creep up a little bit. So nothing wrong with where he is going now. Where he went in the first mock draft, though, yeah, I'm going to say that was too early.
Yeah, that was a little bit rich for our blood. I think that was maybe people getting excited. I believe that was pre-Julio trade. It was, as a matter of fact, pre-Julio. Daniel, I think you're going to help us out and tell us about a couple of our great sponsors.
You bet I am, Field Yates. First off, do you own or rent your home? I mean,
yes.
Sure you do, yeah. And I'll bet it can be hard work, but you know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And it's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around the house. So go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save today. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. And alternatively, the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is also brought to you by our friends over at Gumout. Everyone is looking for an edge in sports, in life, and we all know the words performance enhancement are used a lot these days. But now you can get it legally. All right, hear me out, guys. Gumout with Carbon Clear is performance enhancement for your car. Carbon Clear is potent. It's the most advanced fuel additive on the market. In fact, cars on Gumout get better engine performance and increased fuel efficiency and lower emissions. And who doesn't want to get better engine performance? Am I right? Your car might be getting up there in miles. So make it run like a young stud running back with Gumout. It only takes 2 minutes to pour Gumout into a gas tank, so it's quick and easy to use, and it's not hard to find. You can get it at a mass retailer or at your local auto parts store. So what are you waiting for? Get your car running right with Gumout, now with Carbon Clear. Performance enhancement for your car.
All right, Daniel, great job by you as always. Moving on to a couple of other differences. And some of the differences, Mike, as I mentioned, this was before the Julio, I believe this was before the Julio trade that we did our last draft. Interestingly enough, after the trade, it feels like people are a little bit less excited about Julio, as he went after both Bucks wide receivers in this draft. Previously, he went before both Bucks wide receivers. You were on the podcast when we had the Julio Jones breaking news recap, and you and I both agreed he's going to be, I think we each had him a wide receiver 15, which I don't believe was decidedly better or worse than his previous value. Are you surprised that his slot was quite a bit different in this exercise?
Not really. I think it kind of makes sense. I mean, you know, right now he's going in 12 teamers in the fourth round. He's kind of going 10 teamers going in the early fifth round. I think that's appropriate. I think that's kind of what we talked about, where he kind of belonged. You know, the concerns obviously are moving from an extremely pass heavy to an extremely run heavy offense. And of course his age, you know, he's 32 years old, not to mention that you have AJ Brown, who really should be their number one. He's kind of showed the last two seasons he's one of the best in the business and should be kind of the go-to target there for Ryan Tannehill. So I think he's kind of where he belongs. You know, it adjusts for those concerns, but also includes some of the upside that Julio Jones has. I mean, this is a guy last season who was giving you top five numbers during weeks he was a full go, but obviously was missing a lot of time with the injury. So I think this is about right, and I think this is where we're going to see him drafted throughout the offseason.
Well, a couple of philosophy questions here, Mike, because I agree, you know, like I think that there's a chance that sometimes things happen. Like I think one of the realities of when you do an expert mock draft is that people think that every pick is perfectly pointed and has, you know, significant intent behind it, which it does in some ways. There is sort of an art to it too, right? Some of this is randomness. Like there are times where, like, you know, a month ago, I might've felt a little bit different about a player than I do today. And there are times where, you know, depending on who I drafted early, I'm not saying I am routinely defying my ranks, but you know, the approach might be a little bit different in the seventh round based off of who I landed in the first two rounds, where I might wind up taking a wide receiver who's two or three slots lower in my ranks than somebody else who is available. So it's possible that that Julio placement was nothing more than just a little bit of randomness. Couple of questions here, philosophy-wise, or one, and then we'll get to the second one when we actually discuss the top of your draft. But Eric Carabel, for those who don't know, which I'm sure you do, is the ultimate I'm going to wait on a quarterback drafter, not just at ESPN, but anywhere in the fantasy space. He decided to wait, and he ended up with both Ryan Tannehill and Matthew Stafford. So I would be comfortable personally, Mike, with either of those guys as my quarterback. I'm not saying that Stafford is inside my top 10. I think Tannehill's right on the border. But if you told me my opening week quarterback was Matthew Stafford, I'm not going to feel like you know, I'm left for dead. I'm going to feel excited in some ways. But my question is more philosophy-based. If you wait and you're taking your first quarterback around 13 or 14, is your priority at that point to take one and shoot for the moon, or are you taking two, as he did, to kind of increase your chances of having your solution on your roster right away?
Well, I think I can hedge on this for sure, right? I could take the easy path and say it depends on your league, right? It depends on if you know your league mates tend to take two, maybe three quarterbacks if they get really aggressive. It depends on the size, of course. You know, 10-teamers, I'm more likely to take one because I know there's going to be some quarterbacks on waivers, which, you know, we'll get to that in a second. But 12-teamers, I'm probably more likely to take two. And in a 12-teamer, I think, you know, there's obviously going to be fewer options. Two more teams need a starter, and then those teams could potentially take backups as well. But the thing is, you could take one, and again, 10 and 12-teamers, you're probably going to see guys like Justin Fields and Zach Wilson and perhaps Trey Lance, guys like that, sitting on waivers, right, when all is said and done. You know, so, you know, you have some potential upside sitting out there that you could grab later or have options after weeks one or two if you need to pick up some guys off waiver. So it kind of depends on the flow of the draft. If the draft's going, you know, it's a bunch of savvy drafters and everything's going well and there's no clear values late in the draft, maybe I'll take a flyer on a second quarterback, but it's got to be somebody with upside. It's got to be a Tua or maybe Daniel Jones with a better supporting cast makes a leap, or one of them youngsters like a Justin Fields. I mean, if he's a starter by week three and is running, you know, for 80 yards in a game, you know, he's going to have a ton of fantasy value, much like Jalen Hurts did last season. So I have to cop out. You know, sometimes you got to take the cop out. It kind of depends on the flow of the draft, what's available, and which quarterback is your starter at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the argument against taking two quarterbacks is pretty simple, right? It's that, hey, if a guy is being drafted in the 15th round, there's a pretty good chance he's going to make it to waivers past week one or week two or week three. The argument for is something of the things that you just highlighted, and we have seen quarterbacks in recent years star in week one, dazzle in week one, and keep it up, right? So it's like, you know, you basically got an early start on waivers. You're just guessing right in that instance. So I'm with you that it's probably a fair debate that there is no clear winner on. Let's take a look at some of the teams then, Mike. I'm going to read through some of the teams, the people on this podcast that are also part of this mock, but a couple of notable selections to start. So Kyle had the third overall pick. He goes Derrick Henry, Antonio Gibson, and A.J. Brown. I think what stands out to me, by the way, is obviously running back to start. He's one of six drafters to go that way. Is Antonio Gibson, Mike. I think he's one of those where you could see stardom. Is the back end of the second round too soon on Antonio Gibson, or is that kind of the sweet spot in your opinion?
Yeah, you know what? Almost nothing's too soon for Gibson, I think. I'm on the Gibson bandwagon. Don't tell Matthew Berry that, but I am. You know, look, I think that if you were to kind of scan through the running back position and kind of just highlight the guys who have a path to being the number one overall scorer at running back, it's a short list, right? I mean, once you start getting down to the RB2s, there's a lot of reasons why they won't get there. But Gibson, I think, has the skill set. I mean, this is a guy who, when he was drafted last season, Ron Rivera and the coaching staff immediately said, you know, this guy has, you know, they compared him to CMC. You know, they said he has that skill set. And you might recall, Ron Rivera was Christian McCaffrey's coach in Carolina when he exploded onto the fantasy scene. Gibson was a guy who, at this time last year, we weren't even sure if he was going to play wide receiver or running back in the NFL. He has that skill set. He played wide receiver in college, played a very versatile role, but he didn't really focus on that last season. He did most of his damage as a runner with J.D. McKissic inefficiently carrying the load as the pass-catching back. If that changes this season and Gibson is still handling 55-60% of the carries, getting the goal line work, which allows him to push for 8 to 10 rushing touchdowns, and replaces McKissic on not all, but a pretty generous chunk of the passing downs and has a 15% target share. I mean, look out. This guy will be a clear-cut 20-plus touch guy who could score 12 to 15 touchdown sort of RB1, a mid-range RB1 with upside for even more. So, you know, I I'm sure you know this as well, Field, going on podcasts and doing different shows. We often get asked, what is your bold prediction for the season? And my go-to is always the same. My bold prediction for the season is Antonio Gibson will be the top scoring fantasy running back in 2021.
I love that one, Mike. As we all know, Antonio Gibson really picked things up in the second half of last year. Not that he wasn't great early in the year, too, but he had that stretch where he had that big three touchdown game. Was that on Thanksgiving? I think it was on Thanksgiving, right? I could be wrong there. Thanksgiving, he scored three touchdowns. He was effective in the passing game for the most part. But did not score a receiving touchdown last year. And those are obviously hard to predict, especially for running backs. But you'd figure with an increased workload in the passing game and the potential for scoring upside there. That's a bold one, Mike, but I do like it. Bold predictions. Sometimes I feel like people ask for bold predictions and they get cooler and cooler. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, Dalvin Cook will score 10 touchdowns. I'm like, all right, Tom Brady will, you know, have a good season this year. Like, what else can you tell me that I already know? But I like that one for Antonio Gibson is the number one scoring running back this year. I had the sixth overall pick, as I mentioned. I had Ezekiel Elliott, who was the last of sort of that first tier of running backs that we discussed the show at the beginning of the show, Joe Mixon, and then Justin Jefferson. Mike, I know that we should learn, but we don't sometimes. And what I'm referencing in this case is that we spend the entire offseason, especially during a year when there were OTAs, but they were scaled back. Some teams had, you know, half their veteran players missing. There's limited access for the media to the OTAs. So we're relying upon coach speak. And there's been a lot of coach speak this year, for better or worse, on Joe Mixon. They want him to be a three-down player. They think he's ready for, you know, his best year yet. He's fully healthy. Then we've also heard about a sixth-round pick from the Bengals, who's got the most natural hands from a running back ever, or whatever the specific quote was. But, you know, most of it's been positive about Joe Mixon. Matthew and I recently discussed him, and I was a little bit less optimistic on Joe Mixon only because of being burned recently. So now I'm speaking out of both sides of my mouth. I drafted him in the second round. I'll let you decide whether Joe Mixon is somebody that you're more optimistic about given the coach speak this offseason, or if there's anything that's cause for concern, which might dovetail with the fact that he missed much of last year with a toe injury.
Well, first of all, volume is king. We know that, right? We talk about that all the time, and he's going to get volume. And you know how I know that, Field? Because again, like I talked about with Miles Sanders earlier, they did not invest in that position, right? They got rid of Giovanni Bernard. They have Samaje Perine as the two. They have Travion Williams, a sixth-round pick from a couple of years ago. And the rookie you're talking about is Chris Evans, who, again, is a sixth-round pick who's a little over a year younger than Joe Mixon. You know, he's coming into the league late, and he has issues of his own with, I believe, his injury issues the past couple of years. So he's, you know, again, anytime there's hype about a day three pick, I'm fading that. I'm going the opposite direction for sure. Those guys may pant now, and I hope they do, but they usually don't. So you go the other direction on that, you're going to win most of the time. So not worried about that. You know, Mixon last season, yes, he obviously there's some recency bias here against Joe Mixon, but, you know, he only appeared in six games, but he handled over 80% of their carries and 12% of the targets. He was RB10 in fantasy with a really poor offensive line that's it's still not in great shape, but it's should be slightly better than it was last season. And with a rookie quarterback, and I'll tell you what, if you know, if Joe Burrow makes a leap in his second season and this offense starts scoring, and you would think they would, considering the trio they have at wide receiver, not to mention CJ Uzoma, who's an underrated tight end back, that should open up this offense and open more running lanes for Mixon and allow him to produce. And look, Mixon, again, only 24 years old. He's about a year older than Najee Harris, who was just drafted, hasn't played an NFL down. Still very young. He's been durable before last season. I think there's reason for optimism with Mixon. And honestly, I think he's right where he belongs in ADP. He's a borderline RB1. I think that's totally fair.
Daniel, I'll let you take over here. You went very young with your first three picks. You had the seventh overall selection with Jonathan Taylor, Cam Akers, and Terry McLaurin. So all guys in their third year or earlier in the NFL. What are your thoughts?
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call clickgrainger.com today or just stop by.
Yeah, I felt like seven, I had to go with Jonathan Taylor there, and I kind of feel the same way that Mike did when we talk about, you know, I've been looking at this offseason as though it's a lot of the big six, but I think once I got there, pretty obvious that Jonathan Taylor was going to be the pick for me rather than going wide receiver. I went Jonathan Taylor, Cam Akers, Terry McLaurin. I didn't love the way that this draft started for me, in part because I added Robert Woods in the fifth. I didn't love the idea of two Rams players from the same offense. Not that I don't think that offense will be great, but this is one of those things. I've been going running back a lot in mock drafts, and I wanted to try it again here because I was in a different spot than I normally pick at. So seeing the way that this played out, I wasn't upset about it, but my team is younger, and my wide receivers are definitely a little shakier than I would like. Robbie Anderson, Robert Woods, Brandon Cooks, Devonta Smith. I've got a couple of guys that I believe have some high upside and some big play potential, but that floor isn't necessarily there, and there's definitely some shaky quarterback play as a part of it. So you know what, Field? This is part of mock drafting. You give some things a chance. You try some stuff before it becomes the real deal. You see whether or not you like it, and you decide whether you're going to do it again next time. So I don't think that I will – drafting where I'm at here in the seventh, I feel like that's a pretty tough spot for me. I'm hopeful that Robbie Anderson takes the next step this year, getting Sam Darnold back under center. And I'm a little bit higher on him than most. I believe. But, you know, hey, I didn't start out going five wide receivers and not drafting a running back for my first five picks. I'll tell you that much right now.
Well, who did that? None other than Mike Clay in pick number 9. Walk us through your picks, Mike.
Yeah, so I did go zero running back here. It was not intentional. You know, as I preach often, you know, let the draft come to you. Take the best value pick. If you don't, if there's a value on the board and you don't take it, your league mate's going to. You're at a disadvantage. They're at an advantage. Why would you do that to yourself? It makes no sense. So, look, I mean, if you follow, it might look bad, right? You might look at this and say, okay, you didn't take a running back until the sixth round. This team can't be good. But look at what I was facing, right? So I'm picking 9th overall, again, a 10-team draft. So I took Travis Kelce. That's a value based on his ADP. I could have taken Nick Chubb or Aaron Jones, but of course I want to take Travis Kelce there. Then I come up with my second pick in round 2. I take Tyreek Hill. Again, my running back options, Cam Akers, Joe Mixon, Antonio Gibson, fine, but not Tyreek Hill, who's probably the number one fantasy wide receiver right now. Then at the end of round 3, I took Michael Thomas. Again, I could have taken Josh Jacobs or Chris Carson, David Montgomery, and then Allen Robinson 3 picks later. Same kind of thing. Those were my options. Again, I'm reaching on a running back instead of taking a wide receiver 1. Why would I do that to myself? Round 5, same thing. Get to the end of the round. Guys like Miles Gaskin just went and Travis Etienne. I was looking at Chase Edmonds, Kareem Hunt, Mike Davis. Of course, I'm going to take DJ Moore, who's at worst a mid-range wide receiver 2. I take that, and then I still go, I go with quality options at running back, I thought. I mean, I could build this position all season long. Chase Edmonds and Javonte Williams obviously has a tremendous upside. I gave myself an edge at tight end, I mentioned, with Kelce. I got one at quarterback by taking Kyler Murray at a discount in the 8th round as well. Melvin Gordon, I get the other piece to Javonte Williams there. And Tariq Cohen, a PPR asset, obviously. I take a late flyer there. So, look, if there's a position that you want to exit your draft potentially needing to work on, if you had to pick one of the 4, it's probably going to be the running back position because, you know, and Field, you know this, doing our waiver wire year-round, there's always running backs on there, right? There's always injuries at that position. It's the most injury-prone position. You always have to chip away at it. So you're going to have options to fill out that spot. And in the meantime, I'm loaded everywhere else, right? I'm completely stacked with a tight end, quarterback, and wide receiver. I'm 5 deep. So Will Fuller is actually my 5th wide receiver. So I'm really happy. I actually like this roster a lot, especially in a 10-teamer. I like it a lot. And I can keep working at running back throughout the season. When all is said and done, I should be sitting there at the end.
Probably not, but I'm glad you feel that way. Probably Daniel and I, if we're being entirely honest. No, just kidding. Your team is very, very strong.
I want to play it out now. I kind of want to play it out.
I'm in too many leagues now. I can't play it anymore. It's getting ridiculous. All right. So just as always, the mock draft is available on ESPN.com. If you want to go read it and follow it, we'll be doing more throughout the summer. And I don't know that we'll have a ton of major news after this. But obviously the Aaron Rodgers scenario is something that we're all keeping an eye on, whether he plays, whether he gets traded, whether he does not play. So many different tentacles to that story. In the meantime, Mike, go hang out with your daughter. Happy birthday. And of course, the Clay family, go enjoy a wonderful, wonderful day. For Daniel, Damian, Keith, Kyle, and Mike, I'm Field. We're back next Tuesday. Peace out.
If you need a stick of Tide, Field is your guy. If you're in Bristol or in Farmington, you should find another ride. Candidly, he hates Mike Clay, and you know that it's a fact, every Yater's gonna Yate, 'cause he's on TV every day, a spicy tomato who's got the stats, and tweets that'll make you laugh, he's our favorite host, and everybody knows his name, he's Field Yates.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.